Hello and welcome. The stars have aligned, bringing us all together in the love and hope that is the Captain's Quadrant. This is section 31 and a half because we have questions. And we are delighted to have with us one of the most amazing and inspiring individuals that has been in everything you could think of, from comedies to science fiction. Of course, we have the Guinness World Record holder for playing the most special effects characters portrayed in a career. We have the wonderful Bill Blair. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, actually, I'm pretty good. Yeah. Don't want to brag.
I'm living on the top of the world, baby. Thank you again for many years of friendship on Facebook. You and I have been friends for over 10 years, I want to say.
At least.
And I appreciate each and every year. I'm always excited to see when you're going to appear somewhere. We were very close to meeting in person recently at the STLV 57-year mission. We must have walked by each other. Were you dressed up or?
I got to remember. I actually come there as on my own.
Oh wow!
I'm not part of the convention.
Mm.
I don't want to say we, but let's just say I'm not an invited guest these days.
Oh wow!
So, I set up in the Ultra Lounge outside the main corridor that goes down to the convention in the center.
Oh.
Which I posted about that during certain hours, the where I would be located. In this case, this year it was at the Ultra Lounge.
Gotcha.
And I had a few people that came out to see me and say hi, but it's tough competing against, you know, all the attractions and the events going on within the convention itself.
Right.
So, but right. That's all right. I mean, I just, you know, some people knew I was there, and if they had the time and wanted to, they're welcome to come by and say hello.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, for some reason, when I read your message, I thought you were just walking around. So I was literally walking around looking for you. So, and my foolishness, I left my glasses back in New York. So reading was different. I was like, I think.
Well, I was just a blur anyways.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's Bill.
Kind of a new character.
Yeah. The blur.
The blur.
Yeah, the Bill Blur. That's amazing.
It's almost like Bluebeard.
Yeah, exactly. The bard. That's awesome. So one of the things I learned about you recently was you actually started out in a musical journey after graduating college.
You know, during college, and actually my first musical endeavor was when I was 16, Proverbial Garage Band, bunch of teenagers. Yeah. And I learned a lot in a few short weeks that lasted. Then once I got into college, I got a little bit more serious about the music and everything and started up several different bands over the next 3 or 4 years. Finally had my very own successful band starting in around 76, 77. That's a long time ago for me. had a fairly regular, I'll say just use the word employment. Yeah. That, you know, a lot of bands, you know, they're lucky if they play maybe once a month, every couple of months. If they're really lucky, they become a house band somewhere and they play every weekend. We were rotating between 3 or 4 different clubs. So I was playing usually 3 weekends a month in that period of time. Some of them were more than just Friday, Saturday. Some of them ran literally Thursday through Sunday. In 1980, I became part of a band. We played the Holiday Inn circuit and literally were playing. We could have played 52 weeks a year if we wanted to. We played almost 2 weeks at each Holiday Inn, just rotating with about 4 or 5 other groups.
Wow.
And then in 1981, I had the opportunity to play with a national recording group from the 70s called the Classics Four. And slightly in between that, I was with a one-hit wonder group out of Northeast Ohio, Southern Michigan, the original Climax, not the K-L-Y-M-A-X that people know, but Climax, who had a number one hit in 1972, I believe it was. It was on all the Love albums later on, called Precious and Few. Oh. And I played with them for about 6 months. And then in late 80, and after that, I moved on and formed another band of my own after leaving the Classic Spore. And that lasted, unfortunately, maybe 6 months. And if you read my website, alienactor.com, you'll find that, yeah, that came to an end because of an auto accident in Yellowstone right. Park on our day off.
Yeah.
And I tried to go back 3 or 4 months later in 82 and further complications. And I was advised not to pursue traveling and that type of a stress level. So I went back, regrouped, decided to go into modeling in Chicago in late 1982. That portion of the music career was relatively broken up. First attempt in 1970, and then from 77 through 81, 82 for about 5 years or so. And then I took a long break and started with the acting that fell into my lap in Chicago in 82, 83 after I moved there. My first movie, I was asked if I would just fill in as a background, as an extra, as we knew them back then.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I first got the acting bug. I had done high school theater and things like that, and I majored in broadcasting in college. But this was the first serious professional endeavor into it. So,
yeah,
all well and good. And I went from there. I was in Chicago for 2 years, met an agent in New York when I was there showcasing, and moved to Dallas. That's where I got to work on the first RoboCop movie.
Oh.
Was there from basically 80. I was in Dallas from around 84, 85 until 1990, when I was advised to go to LA.
Right.
With the successes I'd had in Dallas. But while I was in Dallas for those 4 years plus, I was doing music again, but this time as a DJ.
Oh, that's cool.
So I was still enjoying my music, still entertaining.
Yeah.
And then in 1990, went to LA, was there for 2 years, took the opportunity to showcase down in Orlando, Florida, where I met a bunch of casting directors and agents and stuff. That didn't work out. Oddly enough, another auto accident.
Oh, wow.
This time I lost the use of my legs.
Oh, my God.
Went back to recuperate in the family home in Ohio for 4 months. At the end of that 4 months, decided I had, through all my job applications and thoughts about how do I stay in entertainment, I thought about my DJing. So during some of my off time, while I was still in Florida, actually, I had submitted to a bunch of cruise lines. And while I was home in Ohio recuperating from the auto accident, I got a letter from what was then known as American Hawaii Cruises in Hawaii, if I was still interested in being a DJ for their cruise line. So I went out and did a tour there. When I came back, I had 6 weeks off to finish my recuperation from my legs and everything. Came back to California the following January. So January of 93, exactly 1 year before the Northridge earthquake in 94.
Oh, wow.
And I was there. I was in L.A., full time until just over a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had some ups and downs, as I've been telling a lot of people recently. Life is definitely a roller coaster.
Absolutely. And
unless you've been on the roller coaster before, you don't know how to anticipate some of those ups and downs and those twists and turns and things that turn you upside down.
Yeah, you just got to keep rolling with the punches and keep moving on. Yeah, don't get caught up in it. Just mold, reshape, and move forward.
No matter how people ask me, and I said, the only time you fail is when you stop trying.
That's right. That is very sage advice. Absolutely.
If you fail, you probably learned something. So the next time you don't fail that way. Exactly. And so, yeah, I came back 3, 4, 5 different times just in my own way of staying in the entertainment industry. And that, those kinds of endeavors eventually is what found me in LA and found the niche that became my Guinness World Record of what's officially titled the most special effect makeup characters portrayed in a career.
Absolutely.
It's a long title, but that was their idea, not mine.
Can we just like make a shorter version? Like, no, but I think it's fantastic. And, you know, knowing you and knowing that you have that record is just amazing, because I've got to watch you all these years and now I get to know you as a person. So it's just a great little like combination of happenstance and circumstances.
What's really fun is people have gotten to know me, because again, well over 90% of my work has always been uncredited.
Oh yeah.
Really on the screen. But there was a period of time, you know, when Friends was first rerun everywhere and they saw my episode and people would just be instant messaging me back in those days, you know, before Facebook and Facebook Messenger and stuff, they just email me or find a way to get in touch with me that they saw my episode of Friends with no makeup.
Yeah. You know, yeah. They easily recognize. Oh, there's Bill. You know, it's like instant recognition. Yeah.
And one time in a more recent history is one of those rare times where on screen you get to see me go from the human to the alien as I put the robot head on.
Yeah. What ended landed you in the special effects? How did that come about?
I was working on a movie at one of the major studios back in, good Lord, I want to say it was 93. A very well-known makeup artist at the time came by to see his girlfriend who was doing special effects lenses on one of the main actors.
Oh, wow.
He was looking for a teaching model, a teaching subject, so he could teach other makeup artists, you know, the tricks of the trade. And there were probably a dozen or more of us there that said, sure, I'll try, you know, if you like, I'll do it. So they had us all just like any other kind of an interview where they're picking people out, you know, you're on my team. No, I don't want you. We all lined up. He came by, he walked by all of us. He did that little grandmother, you know, oh, you're so cute. Cause he wanted to see what kind of skin tone I had. He saw where my cheekbones were, you know, the general shape of my face. He got close to see what my pores were like. I don't know exactly all the things he was looking at.
Wow.
But in the end, he chose me. And so for a couple of weeks, I was going over to his place and he was teaching, using me as a subject, demonstrating how to put bald caps on, prosthetics, how to make a bald cap look like you've got a shaved head, little things like that. How to make the edges blend so you can't tell where the prosthetic ends and the actor's skin begins, things like that, developing and mimicking the pores and the actual skin tones and textures and imperfections of the actor. Then a couple of weeks later, I got a call from one of the casting services, said I'd been requested to work on this particular show way back then, a show that had been on TV for many years and now we're doing TV movies of it. I had a feeling that, you know, who it was. And sure enough, I arrived there and this makeup artist was there to meet me, came out of the makeup trailer, said hi, introduced me to the second assistant director that would need to know who I was, why I was there. And I was treated very well. And it all went great. I spent probably 3 or 4 different days on that particular TV movie.
Wow.
And then everything just snowballed from there. And then, you know, got around at the casting office and I was called for another show. And after that, pretty soon, that other space show came along that wanted me.
Yeah.
Yes. For those who are listening in and don't get out much, there is an actor strike going on right now, as well as a writer's strike. And so we're avoiding by rule of not mentioning productions and TV shows and studio names right now.
So
that will give you enough hints that you'll understand.
Yeah, yeah. It's the sly and the subtleties that help people get it. And they will. The audience is very bright, so I have the utmost faith in their understanding and acceptance.
I have found sci-fi fans and fantasy fans and people are on the high end of the curve when it comes to awareness and knowledge.
Yes. Yeah, I find that myself. Because it was one of the things that I realized when drafting my questions was not to specifically ask you so I could make sure that we were all copacetic so that you didn't get in trouble. One of the things that I noticed about special effects is you have to sit, and I watched your time-lapse video, 3 hours. putting on your special effects. So what is the hardest part about doing special effects? Is it just the makeup, or is it like, as you're walking around, you start sweating, you have to like hold it together? Like,
this is one of the interesting things about me that the makeup artists in the shows that I worked with really enjoyed and made their life much easier. And my makeup artist that works with me at conventions, where we actually do live makeup demonstrations so people can see how this actually goes on and off. Most of them just want to see how it goes on. They don't take the opportunity to sit around and watch how it comes off. But it's equally as important for people who want to do their own special makeups and everything for their cosplays and everything. But believe it or not, the hardest thing is getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning to be in the makeup chair at 4. Not knowing how long your day might be. Going through my own particular ritual that prepares my face, my skin, or whatever they need that day. Sometimes it has to, I know it's going to go into the next, like one of the aliens, we actually have shoulder pieces. And so I have to make sure that the shoulders also are prepared. One of the most uncomfortable parts is when one of those prosthetics catches one of the body hairs underneath it. And every time you twist and turn, it's a whole new experience of pain. So I have a little pair of scissors around, you know, the makeup artist come around. I say, you need to snip this one. The hard part is the getting going. We used to use an adhesive that was based in Freon.
Oh, wow.
Until that was outlawed.
Oh, my God. That sounds extremely dangerous.
No, actually, it wasn't, because the amount we used was so minimal. The reason the Freon was in with the adhesive is so that as soon as the adhesive is on the skin, the Freon evaporates and leaves the adhesive behind.
Oh, wow. Okay.
They did develop some new adhesives over the years that worked just about as well. But I'll tell you what, I bet a lot of your listeners, and maybe even you, one of the first things they like to do to wake up in the morning is get that first cup of coffee going, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I guarantee you sit in a makeup chair and have this makeup, this adhesive put on first thing with Freon in it that is so ice cold, you will wake up right away.
Okay, I'm ready for life now.
what we're using nowadays is not quite as cold, but it's still got some of the same properties. But no Freon. That actually, for me, in some ways, was the hardest part, especially if you know, in the background and as a non-principal performer, we don't have the same contract benefits as they do.
Right.
Where they have a certain turnaround. Like if they don't wrap until 7 o'clock in the evening, they're not required to be back on set until 7 a.m., which means in the makeup chair or whatever. If we go till 9 o'clock, then that means they're not back until 9. So there's a real trick in production to make sure if they know they're going to go long, what can they shoot the next day with a different cast group before the other ones can come back and things like that. Even directors have 12-hour turnarounds. But as the background stand-in, the lesser people, I hate to refer to it that, that's the way we've been treated a lot of years.
That's terrible.
And because we can go from show to show, we're not specifically, for example, on a single show all the time. I've had times where I got done at 6 or 7 in the evening, and I actually have to be back at 1 o'clock in the morning, 6 hours later.
Wow.
Of course, they do meet. I would be in the first group. They'd make me up, and I'd go in the corner and take a nap for 3 hours.
Or to see Bill look.
On almost a semi-regular basis, there would be shows that, you know, because I would work different shows, I would work show A today and I would get done at maybe 7 or 8 o'clock in the evening. And because I'm doing a different show tomorrow and they're starting at 4 a.m., I have that 8 hours to go home, clean up, get some rest, be up, prep my face and everything the next day and be ready in that chair at 4 a.m. on another show.
Wow. Do you ever get your character's confused because you did so much set, like switching back and forth?
That's where mirrors come in handy. There was one day on a show, I walked past a mirror just, I was going from makeup to the wardrobe department. And I passed a mirror and I actually did a double take of myself because I forgot what we were doing that day.
Oh,
and
wow.
I just even completely forgot because, again, I was a little bit tired yet. I was still trying to get, but no, once you're in the makeup and you see what you're doing and you get the costume on, for me, there was no mistake of what character and what I would be doing that day.
And one of the things about playing different types of characters, do you feel like, you know, each alien that you've played has a, kind of a different personality and presence. Do you feel that you're more into the reserve characters or like the larger than life aliens?
Well, I've had questions asked of me similar to which creature, alien, special effect I relate to the most.
Mm-hmm.
Always found that I like the spiritual, I don't know what other word to use for it at the moment, but solemn, quiet.
More stoic.
Right, but don't cross me. The other ones, which are more aggressive, maybe the warrior or the enemy of the protagonist in the show, those can be fun because you get to choose whether less is more or if you're going to really be big about it as if you were on stage in a theater. And really, I get to be very expressive in some of these costumes and everything because, especially with the makeup, I've got to make my eyes do most of the talking when I'm not even talking. See, in my particular case, I don't have lines.
Mm-hmm.
People ask me also, that's what I say is the second hardest part of what I do. If you want to get an idea of what it's like to play a background actor into prosthetics and get a message across of what you're doing, what are you just, like on some days, I'm just walking through a scene. Other times, I have a specific action. I have to pull this. I have to pull that. I have to actually react to what somebody's saying, and they're catching my reaction on camera. I just say, go play charades for 8 hours and see how you feel.
That's a good analogy. Absolutely.
You know, and then you'll get an idea of what I do for a living.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Do you have to take any, like, for certain aliens that have swords, do you have to do a lot of combat training as well, just to ensure?
Not so much. I haven't had to do so much on camera. One time there was a show where I worked with the stunt coordinator just to make sure he knew I knew how to work the 1940s Tommy gun.
Okay.
50 round chamber.
But those are fun to watch.
and to make sure that I knew where I was standing and where everybody was around me so that the discharge didn't hit anybody.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's important.
And also, they have to make sure that for safety that people around me know don't get in this radius because those are hot brass shells coming out of that Tommy gun.
Oh.
Another one, interestingly enough, I was in a commercial and I was playing a science fiction, I'll use the word trooper.
Okay.
we actually went through a little bit of training, as in the old Renaissance days, of how to hold a shield and how to wield a sword.
Very cool.
So we all did it the same way.
Gotcha.
So that was a little bit of an interesting education. So every once in a while, yeah, there's a little bit of stunt training on the job, you know, with weapons to make sure that we're safe. That we're using, not only using them correctly on camera, for example, people have watched cop shows on television and dramas and everything. And they always see people coming out, holding a gun with their hands, cocked him and put on
sideways. Yeah.
You'll never see anybody, police or otherwise, in real life doing that.
Unrealistic.
For one reason, it is so unsafe to do that. But yeah, so there's sometimes there's, you want to know that you're using the weapon or whatever it is correctly. I learned way, way back. I've only had to do it. I think I only used it once in my career on film or video, whichever you want to call it anymore, on digital, where I actually used a bow and arrow.
Oh.
But I learned that all the way back in my scouting days as a kid of how to properly hold a bow and to shoot.
So you were a Boy Scout? That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. I did all of that. Cub Scouts.
Oh.
I was a lifeguard, water safety instructor. I worked first aid, emergency response. When I was younger, working side by side with the police department with their guidance, learned a lot of things. That's where I originally, took my precision driving, was with them. So it allowed me to do some precision driving on some shows that I worked.
Oh, that's fun. Yeah, one thing about you, you've been able to do everything from comedy to sci-fi. Like, what type of show do you enjoy more? Like, is there like a special place in your heart for those comedies? Or, what would you say? Oh, I can't wait to do this again, type of thing.
Well, there's no question that the episode of Friends was really enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Worked on Frasier a couple of times, very enjoyable. But there's no question that with the history I've got now, that the science fiction, the fantasy world is really special to me. Learning not only from an actor standpoint, but from the technical standpoint of working with a green screen, for example, working in a scene where I could take the example, I was in the movie Garfield years ago. It was in the early 2000s, Garfield's first movie. And I was cast as Garfield's groomer. Where Garfield would come in and get fluffed and puffed and groomed and flipped and all this other good stuff. And of course, obviously, I'm not going to be working on an animated character.
No, that's not real.
I'm in my shop, and I have to imagine and know exactly the dimension, not the real dimensions, but approximate size of what Garfield's going to be looking like sitting on the table in front of me as I groom him. And I'm literally looking in thin air.
Yeah. To pretend, okay, Garfield, I'm petting you, you know.
Yeah. And then later in the scene, Garfield is on another counter talking to all the critters, cats and whatever, in the cages on the back wall. And I have to react to all that. I'm reacting to empty space.
It's the ultimate goal of making pretend.
Yes. Again, here's another fun thing. This was more behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Go way back to Mr. Lynch's first run at Twin Peaks in the early 90s.
Wow, that was such a trend-setting show.
I worked as the short order cook in the Double R Diner scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And all you see of me back there is basically here up.
Yeah.
Just your head. And setting the food up whenever I'm ready. All that's happening back there is a table that has the props on it.
Oh.
For me, and there's one shelf behind me that the camera sees. It's got canned goods and whatever else on it that we'd be using to work on the griddle and cooking and everything. So every once in a while, you'd see me go to that, take something as if I was doing it, and then bring it back and put it back. There's no griddle. There's no sink. There's no water. There's nothing back there.
It's all make-believe.
And you see me working back there. You see my arms moving. I'm just pretending and thin air what I'm doing if I had the griddle in front of me.
All the movements, none of the reality. Yeah.
Kind of like life these days.
Yeah. That's so true.
No substance.
Exactly. Oh man. So a lot of the basis of the current situations going on with actors is the entrenching of AI. For somebody like you, especially, it's probably going to be the hardest hurdle to overcome. How do you feel, and what are your thoughts on AI?
Well, one of the major contentions, and our president made this very clear during her press conference at one point, that the producers, the studios, want to be able to bring in they're still using the word extras, even though it's not in our contract anymore. We are officially and legally known as background actors.
Mm-hmm.
They want to bring in their background, and they just want to parade them through, photograph them as necessary. And I've already been through this in shows. And I'll explain one in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And digitize them, put them in a file, and be able to keep them. And then bring them out like a toy whenever they're ready, whenever they want to put them on screen.
Yeah.
But that actor, that background actor, gets paid for one day and one day only, if that.
Mm.
And then they can be used in under what the producers want. They could be used in perpetuity, if I said that word right.
You did. In perpetuity. Yeah.
How about the word forever?
Yeah.
The rule on that is that they can use them whenever they want. And they're trying to save money. They're trying to say, oh, we only have to pay them for one day and we can use them forever. No, that just can't be right.
No.
And there was a time, there was a sci-fi movie that I was brought in to photo double. Actually, I appeared in the movie twice as a human.
Oh.
One time in this franchise that I never appeared as an alien race.
Oh, wow.
Actually, the second time. There was another one of the franchises. There's a story behind that, which unfortunately I can't really relate to right now. Mm-hmm. But it's a fun story. If you ever come to a convention when this whole thing's over, I love telling this story about how one time I ended up in a scene as a human, all because the comment was made, doesn't matter, we won't see his face ever again anyways.
Oh, wow.
In this other movie, I worked a couple of scenes as a human. And then on another day, I was taken into the visual effects studio. And they just what they were talking about with AI, in a sense, they photographed me three-dimensional. I mean, not only with video cameras, but with still cameras. I was shot from every which direction and live so that they could put me inside and be the bodies of just these guys' heads that you would see on camera.
Oh, wow.
Another time similar to that happened as well. I've been through this procedure a few times. So when they talk about this AI, this is getting very sophisticated compared to what I even did in the past.
Yeah.
Another movie way, way in the back, superhero movie that I was the prototype for. And I went in and for 10 hours created a pose, photographed me. This was back during Polaroids, even though it was so long ago.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Photographed every angle of me that you could think of. They didn't even need to bother with video on this. They literally photographed every angle they could. Then I went into the plaster room and had a full body plaster cast done of me in that pose.
Whoa.
And that became me on set.
Wow. So when they do full body plastic, do you feel a little bit claustrophobic? Because that's basically total and covered. Yeah.
Well, that's one of the other reasons I work so often is I do not have claustrophobia as part of my being. I can be closed up, you know, encased. I worked an episode of a show one time where a gentleman was trying to fill in because one of the background actors got held up and didn't get in on time. Mm-hmm. So they were going to put this stand in the costume. He had never done it before. Mm. We got one or two takes into it and he said, I don't feel good.
Oh.
I said, you're claustrophobic, are you? He says, I don't know. I said, well, better than fall down, let's just tell our AD, let's see if we get you out of this and sit down for a moment. If you feel better, then we know there's a problem. And sure enough, as soon as he got the head off, he started feeling better. And they said, okay, well, we're just going to work with two instead of three aliens. That's all.
Oh, wow.
Safety before anything else. That's one of the things about the movie making and entertainment. The old saying, it's only a movie. Your life, your safety is more important.
That's right.
This is why stunt coordinators and everybody are so vital. You know, accidents that we've read about in the last couple of years on sets actually should never happen.
Right.
I don't use that word never, but in this particular case, should never happen. If people are really doing their jobs, yes, unfortunately, we do have that phrase, accidents happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's a preventable accident, that's when it becomes a problem. It's not like people walking around a blind corner and bumping into each other. That was unseen, unplanned. You had no idea what was going on.
Right. So you have like standards and procedures for every step of the way to prevent
them. You're dealing with weapons on set or, you know, you rehearse these things. There's no reason to have these unfortunate, preventable accidents.
Right. Right. Very true. Very true. So another thing that I'm assuming that has come into your life, whether you've expected it or not, is this like unsurmountable amount of patience to deal with life and in general, because you're sitting there for hours and getting all the prosthetics and sitting doing the show and then coming back to get everything off of you. So like, Are you one of those people that can be on a Christmas line for like 4 hours or Disneyland or anything like that? And it's like, meh, no big deal to me, you know?
I remember going to an amusement park once, and my brother and I went around it once. We got back to the disembarking place, and he says, "You guys want to go again?" I said, "Sure." I happened to be wearing some, shall we say, some clothing merchandise from one of the shows I was working on, and he happened to be a fan of. We started talking, and he said, "If you want to go around again, let me just tell me."
Oh, that's awesome.
It was really, if people's eyes were lasers back then, my brother and I would have been dead multiple times. For these people to see us coming back through in the seats, and that meant nobody in that line could get in, and they had to wait for another round.
Yeah.
A little embarrassed, but at the same time, I thought, yeah, this is what it's like to be a celebrity once in a while.
Oh, yeah, that's fun.
And once in a while is okay. I don't, you know, go around saying, "Oh, give me this, give me that." That's
right.
What I'm about. But when somebody recognizes you and wants to do something nice for you, it's a gracious way of accepting.
Right.
I always tell people, you know, I get asked, how did you learn to sit so long? I mean, what's that like to sit in the chair? Well, first of all, we do take breaks.
Mm.
Somebody that, like a lot of my makeup artists were smokers, so they'd have to take a break and go outside and smoke.
Oh, wow.
And then come back, but it gave me a chance to stand and stretch my legs. We might do that every 25, 30 minutes. If we're in a hurry, no, I have to go in, we sit, we do it. The shortest one I ever had one time was 45 minutes.
Oh.
It was literally done on the day. We were shooting, and they realized they needed another alien in this scene, and therefore, boom. Okay, Bill's here. I was working behind the scenes that day. Bill's here. They said, "How long is the lighting set up?" They said 45 minutes. I said, "Okay, we'll be done." It was not a close up or anything like that. They, as we used to say, it just needed to fill a hole. It was necessary.
Mm. Gotcha.
And because the makeup artist had done me as this character multiple times, this alien, we got it on very quickly. Meanwhile, wardrobe already had pulled what they needed for me. They knew my sizes. They knew what I'd worn before. So this is also another benefit of shows hiring the same background and people time and time again, because it makes their job easier. But I always like to tell people, how did I learn to sit so long? I learned as a kid on Saturday morning, sitting in front of the TV, watching cartoons without moving.
Oh, there it is. The classics. There's something special about Saturday morning cartoons. It's like going back. Even if, they'll pop up on a feed every now and then because of the shorts and such, and people will take clips and put them up. And then you just automatically like transported back to that time. And you're just sitting there like, oh my God, I remember like being in front of those big tube televisions, just being happy going, oh, there he goes, the robot in disguise, you know.
Giving himself away. I grew up, went from black and white to color. That was extremely exciting.
Yeah. Technicolor.
Yeah, it was. That was just one aspect of, you know, what I think, you know, I, as a kid, learning how to sit still for a long time. Right. Of course, in those days of growing up in the classroom in elementary school and everything, you sat in a chair and at a desk in the same classroom for hours, and you might get a break in a couple of hours for recess or something like that. So, yeah, we were sitting for a long time at once.
Yeah.
And then the other thing people ask me was, when did you first start acting? And I say, from the time my mother said, "Would you grow up and act your age?" That's the beauty of comedy, is the unexpected twists.
Yeah.
Or like in the movie I worked on called Prestige, they talk about, and Michael Caine is talking to, I think it's Christian Bale or...
Right.
Or was it
Wolverine? Hugh Jackman, maybe.
Hugh Jackman, thank you. When he's talking to him about the procedures of magic, you know, you have basically, and I don't remember the exact words right now, but you have the setup, the reveal, and then the prestige, okay? And the prestige being that twist, the unexpected, or in this case, the outcome of the trick, whether you make something appear, disappear, or magically transform.
Right. Get out of something.
And so that's kind of comedy in itself. You know, you've always the joke lines, you've always got the setup for it, and then you've got the twist. You've got the unexpected. And that plays in a lot of things. And comedians, stand-up comedians, it's always been known that there can't be two comedians. I mean, you think about some of the greatest, you know, you had Abbott and Costello. You always had the comedic, which was Costello, and the straight man of Abbott. Stanton, Laurel, and Hardy. Laurel was really the comedy of it. Oliver Hardy was really the straight man, even though he got to put in a few licks too. The Three Stooges, they were just slapstick. That was old vaudeville.
Right.
They each had their moment, but for the most part, Curly was always the key comic.
Mm-hmm.
Stand-up comics, she's either got to be the funny part, or the script has to be funny. It can't be both.
Mm.
You separate them. And it's like the script in a movie or a scripted show. The script tells the story. The actors just conveys it. And if there's a joke there, then the timing of that delivery is essential.
Absolutely. That's well said.
So as the alien, I don't get lines.
Yeah.
So how do I convey? Where's my timing? It's all in body language. And that's why I come back to go play charades. You'll learn what it's like to use body language day in and day out, and you just get good at it.
Right.
And how to play dead. You have to play dead more times and in more ways than anybody could imagine between on that one movie, literally being shot dead. And they specifically directed and asked if I could be dead with my eyes open and not blink.
Oh. Oh, God.
And at the same time, not breathing.
So you
can tell people who have practiced being dead, because if they're, especially younger actors who have never really done it, like even children actors, you'll always see that little bit of eye flutter as they're trying to play dead. The other ones, you will see a little chest movement or something. You can see lightly that they're breathing if you look closely. But the idea is, that's not what you're looking at. You're looking at the whole picture, so you're not seeing ideally strictly what's going on technically. Right. I was hired for a movie one time, literally to play dead, where I was to sit up in the coffin.
Oh.
And they thought they'd have to use scaffolding and ropes and wiring and rigging and everything so it would lift me up. But the director I knew had called me and said, hey, this is what they want. I said, let me talk to him. I bet he can do it. We won't have to do all this. About 6 hours later, I'd figured it out, and I called him back. I said, can props give me this? Make sure that the casket is only an upper body showing, or have something to drape over my ankles so that we can hide sandbags down there so that my feet won't move. I put not a weightlifter's belt, but a very thin corset under my body, and a couple of other things. I don't want to give away all my secrets.
No, you can't.
Literally, I was able to sit up like I was totally, what's that word? Rigor mortis.
Right.
I was literally able to sit up straight without my back bending or anything.
Wow.
My arm was almost robotic when it came out to the side, because this invisible person was grabbing my arm to steal a watch while I was dead. It was a lot of fun to do. And the producers came to me. They were just ecstatic almost that the director knew somebody like me that could come in there and do this for them and save them literally thousands of dollars.
Yeah. I mean, imagine all the extra props and things that they don't have to do now because you have those abilities.
And all of that comes just from experience. It comes from being creative. And yeah, I watched a lot of shows and just said, oh, you could do it this way. Sometimes it's natural instinct. And that's part of an actor, too. Part of a creative person is just they have good natural instincts. And again, inside of all the aliens and everything else and the different characters, one assistant director said, yeah, he brought me back time and time again because he knew that I was always give him something different for every episode. Just because we were in the same office, I wouldn't do the same exact things all the time. I had different things in the back of my head I walk a different pace. One time I'd sit in a chair, the next time I'd sit on the edge of a desk. Little things like that. Even that's outside of aliens. When I am an alien, it's like I actually have to change my posture, change my upper body movements. Matter of fact, one of the supervisors, the makeup supervisors, came by one time, reminded me and a couple of others, hey, you guys, you can turn your head. You're not stiff. These things will move for you. If it doesn't, we'll put it back down. Every once in a while, you actually can feel like in a couple of them, they feel very robotic, but you're not supposed to act robotic.
Right. Got to have a smooth, molded way about it. Yeah, fluid.
And that's why you've got supervisors. You've got another set of eyes around to help you realize you're being a little stiff, so loosen it up. Other times when you're supposed to be robotic and you're not, they tell you, hey, you know, tighten down those screws a little bit. Don't be moving your arms around so much.
Yeah. So I notice you're always ever evolving and growing into the next thing. What's next on the horizon for you once all this strike and things are
I'm actually at this point just enjoying some free time.
Oh.
Over the last year or two, I've been invited to be on a couple of projects. I've got my own production company, Nova Star Pictures, and people come to me as like a consultant producer for the creative consultant and things like that, because I can come up with ways for the younger production people. They want to, for example, they want to time or they want to cross scenes, but they don't have the budget to do all the special effects, the visual effects.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very simple. Just do a split screen. And you've seen it before. Like we would do little things like on another show where people went from one universe to another.
Right. I was thinking that same show. I think
it's basically a bright light.
Yeah.
You know, it's bright lights and flashes have done things like that for decades. It's just like, have them here. Make sure your camera is locked off and there's no movement. Big flash of light. And they come back and they're in the same position again. Different wardrobe. Set up the lighting different. Make sure the background's different. But they're in a new location. Very simple to do, actually. People turn to me for a little bit of the creative side of producing and everything. But I have had a few productions want me to be a part in one of their shows. And there's some that I'm considering, but others it's like, no, I don't want to do that anymore.
I have a limit now. How about, you ever thought about directing? Cause you have the experience and the knowledge.
Actually, I was asked, there was a show once that I was putting together, and the writer's manager was there and everything. And we were on the creative production side of it. And the writer's manager said, well, you know, when it came to getting a director, because I knew a few that were interested in doing it, they said, well, do you want to direct? And I said, no, I don't. This is not a project. I don't want to multitask too much on doing what would have been my first major production. I'm either going to produce or I'm going to direct. And right now you came to me as a producer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm going to focus on. And I know people that can direct and they'll work with me and we'll get the right look and everything, like getting the right cinematographer. Cinematographer is also a director in their own right.
Right.
That's why in some areas are called director of photography.
Sure.
And the producers also have background. And I know, I probably know more shows than not where the producers are also directors of episodes or the film. I've had offers. I directed plays when I first got to Los Angeles. And when I was in my bands back in my music days, I was the musical director and road manager.
Oh, wow.
So you've got a lot of, you know, the producing, the directing, the creative artist going in me all the time, which I enjoy.
You're right. It's in the blood. It's in the blood. So one last thing is, I know time is running. You did some print that stood out to me. I was reading on your website. You were a zombie in a book that was released in 2011. I'm not sure the particulars because Kenan can't say about it, but
no, this has nothing to do. So we can talk about that in
depth. Oh, okay, good. So you were in the Brain Eater's Bible.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And I appeared on page 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I am the only zombie in the book they gave a name to.
Oh.
Actually known as Zombie Bill.
Zombie Bill, yes.
They wanted that little thing in there because they knew about my Guinness World Record coming up and a lot of other things happening. So, yeah, I was, you know, that was all print work. One day job. Makeup artist that I'd worked with on other shows was there and basically pulled me in. Like other movies that I've worked on, and there's a whole group of makeup artists there. And as soon as they see me come through the door, they said, come sit in my chair. I know you're easy to do. You know what's going on. I don't have to train you.
Yeah.
But being a zombie, I'll tell you, there's a lot more makeup goes into that what one might think.
Really? I thought it was just like a spray. I'd love to hear about that.
On one of these, matter of fact, there was another movie. It was basically a post-nuclear movie. Where I was part of we'll call it a petting zoo.
Mm-hmm.
It was amongst other barnyard animals, but I was the human.
Right.
And sometimes, yeah, for making up this good, crusty, post-nuclear zombie creature characters, it's almost like an Indian clay mud that's put on your body, and they just let it dry, and it naturally cracks.
Huh.
And then they color it, if it's not already colored. Some of it, like, yeah, there'll be some prosthetics. Sometimes it literally is, it's just thick layers of a makeup material that's similar to clay.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm speaking as a makeup artist, which I'm truly not, although there was a time when one magazine came out to cover a production that I was working on. And they called me and asked me to be their makeup artist because the one they had just bailed on them.
Oh.
And I was the one they knew that had any background in it. And the magazine who interviewed everybody else, but never talked to me directly.
Figures.
But I apparently got some information about me from other people on set,
mm-hmm.
producer, director, whatever, got their wires crossed. And they boasted of me in this article as an Academy Award winning makeup artist that just happened to be an actor.
Oops.
I thought, wonderful. TV Guide years ago, back in the early 90s, mid 90s,
mm-hmm.
got it wrong. They mistook me for another actor in a photo that they put in TV Guide.
Wow.
And then 3 years later had to do the correction and stuck it clear on the back pages. But I've got both of them, so that's part of my promotion once in a while. But yeah. The zombie was fun in the Brain Eater's Bible, and that book's still in circulation. I've still got a couple of copies myself that I take to the conventions with me, mm-hmm. along with full 8x10s of that particular photo.
Oh, that's awesome. And you also wrote a book about getting started in this business.
Oh, that book is so outdated, but thank you.
Yeah, it's always good to...
People ask me if I'm going to do a second edition of it, and I said, well, maybe when I really don't have anything else to do or run around the way I do, I'll sit down and maybe I'll write another one.
Right.
Because the way things evolve, that book I wrote back in 1986.
Right.
And it was based on my teachings. I used to teach modeling and acting when I was in Chicago for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's simply a 75-page handbook. I don't even call it a book. It's a handbook, large print, because it was supposed to be kind of a minor textbook. And this was back in the days where we talked about answering machines and almost the early stages of pagers.
Right.
You know, voicemail was not even a thing back then. And so it's really way out of date. But the principles are still the same about the attitude and the way to get started, how to hold yourself, how to act as a professional, to be a professional. If you act as a professional, eventually the real you is going to come out. So you have to learn to be a professional. One of my biggest teachings, I'll give this part of the book away, is about if you're invited to a black tie dinner and you're on a stepladder, for example, and the stepladder has 10 or 12 steps. It's a big ladder.
Mm-hmm.
And typically you go out to the bars with your buddies and everything, kicking around with the beers and the drinks and having just a jolly good old time, casually shooting pool or whatever. on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of elegance and proper etiquette, that probably falls down around 3 or 4 at the best, would you say?
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden Spielberg or some of these other big wigs, that's the only name I'm gonna mention because it's not associated with anything right now.
Yeah.
Is you get invited to a big black tie affair. Could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
And
but now
you've got a black tie, you've got to know what fork to use, how to stand up straight, how to properly shake somebody's hand and everything else. We're now talking about a 10. You're on that top step of that ladder.
Yeah, you're 12, baby. That's it. Yeah.
Okay. How do you get from 5 to 12 overnight? How do you learn that quickly?
Right.
However, if you practice being a 10 or a 12 all the time, but this weekend you're going to go out with your buddies, it's really easy to come down the ladder to that 5.
Yeah.
Harder to climb up than it is to go down.
That's true. That's true. That was like one of those.
That's the kind of ways that I was teaching and the things that I put in my book.
That's fantastic. And those things are important for people to learn because a lot of people, especially in the internet age, that get famous on YouTube overnight, they think they're on 12, you know, and they don't come in with a sense of humility. And these lessons, if they come in with these lessons of humility on the way in, I think they'll be more attuned and akin to understand the world that they're coming into. And I think that those things are super important. And I'm encouraging you all the way from Jersey to continue that. And hopefully
I realize I'm probably getting a little bit dark here right now too, as the sun's going down and
clouds.
Sorry about the lighting.
No worries. Sorry about the cough. Excuse me.
But no, it's been great to be here with you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Bill, for taking this hour and hanging out with us in the Captain's Quadrant in Section 31 and a half, because we had questions and thank you for answering them. I really appreciate it. Let people know where they can reach out to you if they want some consulting and advice, and let people know about your website and such. And all of these links that you mentioned will be added below so that you can catch up with Bill and learn more and, you know, get the sense of patience that you need in order to get into this world.
And just know, if for whatever reason you contact me through my website, social media, or whatever else, that you will be talking to me. I don't have assistants doing this type of stuff. I like one-on-one. I like to be personal.
All right. Take care, Bill. Have a great night.
Thank you. You same.